If Rahm Emanuel listens to this, I hope he sits down. It might shock him. I think I'm going to defend him a little bit today. It's not that he's a humble man. There's nothing humble about Rahm Emanuel. I mean, you can see it in his face and the way he talks to people. There's nothing humble about him. But I'm going to defend him, oddly enough. And I'm also going to talk about a truly humble man. But a man that was beloved. A man who was great and loved in Chicago. Who never thought or acted like he was anything special. Who never looked down his nose at people. Who could mix with everybody in a diner, in a bar. A man who was confident in himself. And loved by everyone, the great and late Stan Mikita of the Chicago Blackhawks. That's what we'll talk about out in the tomato garden. Tomato garden on my left. Cucumbers are dangling from the trellis. Tomatoes are getting ripe. And you're sitting in your car or on your iPhone or wherever you're listening to this. And I'm sitting out with a cup of coffee and some and a bowl of beautiful peaches from Calhoun County. And I might just have a bit while you listen to this music. Because this is John Cass. And this is the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun, he sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Defending Rahm Emanuel. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard to defend him because I keep, you know, especially now that he's talking about how we need a spiritual component in our lives. I mean, God, Rahm, I'm thinking back at that photograph that Will Lee from the Tribune took when he was working for me on this column. He took a picture of Rahm at a church, black church, with the Holy Spirit. His eyes were closed. He was standing up with the ministers. They're praying, and his eyes are closed. It's looking like he's basking in the light of the Holy Spirit, I swear. Of course, at the same time, he was sitting on the Laquan McDonald video. City Hall wouldn't release it, which is causing him all these problems, and police now, too. But now he's saying we need a spiritual component. We need to revitalize our spirit. He's asking the ministers to get involved in fighting crime, and he's also, I guess, going to start a new bureaucracy where they can have jobs, because that's what this is about, politics. He's running for re-election, and all that's true. And he's late to the party, and he's gutted the police department and the detective section. And yeah, I know that I've heard some people say, if you don't have a solution, shut up, don't talk about it. But you know what? See, this is what I do. I talk about stuff and I write about stuff. And when 72 people are shot down in the city of Chicago and 12 die or 13 die and others die, you know, in the days following, and there's politics and blame, that's what I do, man. I don't shut up about it. We're not supposed to shut up. That's what politicians want you to do. But anyway, back to defending Rahm. The other day, there was a quote that he said, something that's largely been forgotten. When he was out talking the first day about the homicides and the fact that basically his city's out of control, he said, quote, "Too many people with criminal records are on the street, and there's a shortage of values about what is right and what is wrong." And then Eddie Johnson, his superintendent, police superintendent, guy I like, said, "Too many people with criminal records on the street, too many shooters, they don't go to jail, they're not sentenced to jail." And I get it, you know, I understand what this is. And you're on listening to the Chicago Way because you understand that I'm going to tell you. I've been covering politics a long time, and I can tell that when a politician wants to say something and he can't, And from those two comments, Johnson and Manuel, what they want to say is, Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, why aren't you putting these people in jail? That's what they want to say. They want to put it on Kim Fox. And I think there's a point to be made. I don't know what her felony rates are, but I bet you they're low. She made a big thing of, you know, not putting people in jail. She didn't want to put people in jail. Tony Preckwinkle, her boss, her mentor, her political puppet master, the Cook County board president, who I call Tony Taxwinkle, doesn't want to put people in jail. So people aren't in jail. And Rahm wants to say it. I guarantee you. He wants to say, Kim Fox, why aren't you doing this? He wants to have someone to blame. But he can't. He can't because she's African American. He can't because he doesn't want to anger African Americans. He just keeps his mouth shut and takes it. And he's been beaten up for it. Part of that's his own fault. He said on the Laquan video, police went fetal as a result. And they stopped making arrests because he had that ACLU decree signed where police officers had to fill 3 pages worth of forms when they make an arrest, and they didn't want to be susceptible to firing or losing their pensions. So they went silent. They went fetal. All this is part of it. It's all circular. But he doesn't want to criticize Kim Fox. He's dying to. He's itching to. But he can't. Because if he does, he'll be criticized. He can't afford it. And he's just sitting there taking it right now. So you wouldn't say Rahm is a humble man. But I want to tell you a story about another guy. And this guy was beloved. I met him a couple times myself, and I was very lucky to do so. I was a busboy, waiter. It was a waiter job. At the Lexington House Banquet Hall on 95th Street, near the 294, off Harlem. They had the flaming prime rib. They'd seat guests at the banquet hall. They would lower the lights. Somebody would squirt some cheap brandy on the prime rib, and they'd light it ablaze. Oh, it was a big deal. One evening, there was a party, 800 people. The Frank Leahy Notre Dame Awards Night Dinner. Named after the legendary coach Frank Leahy, and everybody in sports was there. Bobby Hull, Stan Mikita, Gale Sayers, Chet Walker, Bob Love, Dick Butkus. They were all there. So after we served dinner, they had speakers. And we were kids, we didn't want to hear old journalists talking. Who wants to hear some journalists talk? We went in the back. We had work to do. We went in the kitchen. We sat on Pepsi crates. We ate rolls, the hot rolls, and we folded napkins for the next day's party. That's what we had to do. We had to fill up buckets and buckets of napkins. And so they're yammering out there, and they're talking about Frank Leahy and Notre Dame. And don't get me wrong, I love Notre Dame. But there they were, talking and talking and telling jokes, talking and talking. And we're sitting around trying to listen, but we're doing our work. And who walks in the group with us in the back by the dishwasher on the tiled floor of the kitchen? There's a man, immaculately dressed, nice suit, hair slicked back, kind of a shy smile. We knew it right away. Stan Mikita. Stan Mikita. He was sitting right there with us. Pulls up a Pepsi crate. Sits on the end of it just like we're doing. balances there. I don't remember if he smoked or not. Some of the guys were smoking. And, you know, when you're young men, you think you're going to, you want to act like you're older. And we're just modeling after our parents in those days. And he starts folding napkins. And we're just in awe. Imagine Jeff Carlin. If Jeff Carlin were, you know, he's a big Blackhawks fan. What if Jonathan Toews or Kaner came in the control booth and started flipping buttons with Jeff Carlin? Jeff would be freaking out. I know it, Jeff. So here we are looking at Stan Mikita. "Why aren't you inside, Mr. Mikita?" he said. Someone said, "Ah, it's all BS in there. Too much talking. How are you guys doing?" And it was like being with somebody you knew. Stars don't do that. Big stars, you know, they're told how great they are. They're told how wonderful they are. Their butts are kissed constantly. They start to believe it. Writers, too. Oh, yeah, writers, definitely. Although we're not big stars like hockey players or athletes, but movie stars, all these people that are big, big public figures. And a lot of them believe their own BS, but Stan Mikita didn't. And the other day, when I heard he passed, I had to go out to a little restaurant in Berwyn, you know, a Greek snack shop called Connie's Family Restaurant on Harlem, because I had heard that that's where Stan Mikita started out, not at the restaurant, but nearby. He and Bobby Hull would drink at the bar across the street, the legendary Berwyn Bar, and then come over for steak and eggs. And they got to know people. And he would continue to go. He married a girl from Berwyn, and he'd continue to go to Connie's. And he'd have a beer or two at that place across the street. And I just wanted you to hear about it, because to me, that's why he was loved. He was a great player. He was one of the best that ever played, but he never forgot who he was. He never thought he was better than anybody or worse than anybody. He was Stan Mikita, confident in his own skin, and people loved him. Yes, I'm talking to Coach Ken Geiger, Morton High School, and also college football coach. Grew up in Berwyn, and down the street here from Connie's restaurant, there was a guy that everybody knows in Chicago named Stan Mikita.
Stan was here in Berwyn. He lived not far from here, and he roomed with Bobby Hull for a while when they first came up as young bucks for the Hawks.
What was that like? How did you get to meet them?
Well, I met him at a place called Kwan's Oasis. It's a little bar in Berwyn, typical Chicago-type bar. And they needed a place to work out. And since I was at the high school right down the street, I invited them to use the facilities at Morton. So the two young kids came to Morton and worked out. They ran the track, lifted weights, used the swimming pool. And they were just a little older than the kids that were in school. So it worked out great for them, and it helped our community.
How did they find Berwyn?
I think it was through Mickey Madigan that they got the place that they lived in.
From what I understand, you've been friends with Stan ever since.
This would be good take back to the 50s, and Stan and I and Bobby have been friends ever since.
Let me tell you a story and tell me if it sounds real. Okay?
Yes.
I was 16, 17 years old. I was in high school. I'm Greek American, so I got fired from my dad about, I don't know, 3 or 4 times, you know, because I worked for him and because I was being an idiot. And he kicked my ass and said to go find another job. And I was working at a banquet hall on 95th Street called Lexington Banquet Hall, Lexington House, the famous prime rib. They had the Frank Leahy Awards night dinner.
Notre Dame Awards.
Yeah. And so we were there. We were folding napkins, the busboys. We were sitting on Pepsi crates, folding napkins, learning how to smoke, or, you know, we're just goofing around, eating hot rolls. And who walks in with all the talking going on? Stan Mikita. And we freaked out, and he just pulled up. He goes, "Hey, guys, there's something." I don't remember exactly what he said. He just sat down and started folding napkins with us. And we were just, like, freaked out. You know, this is Stan Mikita. But after a couple seconds, we're like, "What are you doing here?" He goes, "Ah, that's bullshit in there." And he just, he was like a guy like you would know from your neighbor. Immediately, you never thought of him as like a big shot, like a star. Does that sound like a crazy story to you?
No, that sounds exactly like Stan. I think he was raised by his grandparents in Canada. And he and I got along very well together because we both spoke Czech. And he was a Czechoslovakian, and my background is Czech also. So we used to converse in Czech a little bit. He was much better than I at it, but we got along. And we used to laugh about it. But that sounds exactly like Stan. He was a down-to-earth, regular human being with a heart of gold. There are a few professional athletes that still remain down-to-earth and regular guys. Walter Payton is an example. Stan Mikita, Bobby Hull. I don't think they ever sought the spotlight. They were in it constantly, but they always remembered, I like to use the expression, where they came from. They came from families that brought them up correctly, and they never sought the spotlight, but they were in it. They were just regular people, and that's very, very rare today in some of the professional athletes. So take it from there that they were just great kids.
When he came up, he was a fighter. He was, I think, one of the most penalized players
in Canada,
right? When Junior A, he was like a scrapper.
Yeah.
He comes down here, and in a short time, I forgot the trophy that was.
Lady Bing.
Lady Bing
Trophy. Lady Bing Trophy. He won many times because he was a gentleman on the ice.
What happened?
I think the coach at that time at the Hawks explained to Stan that he couldn't play hockey in the penalty box. And I think Stan just picked it up from there and became the player he became. And he left that scrapping back when he was a young kid. He played hockey the way it should be played.
I'll take you back. All right, it's like 4 in the morning. Everyone's telling stories. Then somebody says, "Time to go get some breakfast." You come over here. What happened?
Well, I don't think it was 4 in the morning, but anyway, we'd
come. Was it 6?
Maybe 6 or 7, but we'd come over to Connie's, have a little breakfast, and then, of course, depending on the season, they either had to go to practice, right, or they came over to the high school and worked out.
Right.
But they were both great guys, and they mixed with the people. They just became regular people, regular customers, whether it was in the bar or the restaurant or wherever.
And for Stan, why the humility?
I think from where he came from, Czechoslovakia, through Canada, I think he had a hard life when he was a youngster. I'm not sure about that.
They didn't have a lot of money. Yeah.
But he learned to cope with it. He learned to overcome it. And I think he did that through hockey and his association with people. He loved people. And on the other side, Stan was one hell of a golfer. And he turned that into a nice hobby. He became a pro at Medina, or not Medina, but one of the clubs out here in Illinois. And Stan was just a humble guy that was a great athlete.
When he'd be here in Connie's, people would come up to him? Would they say hello to him? Would they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and he was very gracious. But here the people in Berwyn kind of took him for granted. He married a lovely Berwyn girl that went to our high school. They had a wonderful family. And Stan would never turn anyone away for an autograph or anything like that. He was very pleasant, understanding. And yes, at times he was harassed by people who wanted an autograph, but he never got upset.
I'm told that there was a crew that, like, I guess you were part of it, that still met here, that you'd run into each other, gather here occasionally.
Well, I think Stan and Bobby were very instrumental in putting together what they call the White Eagle or some kind of organization. And they used to meet at a place called Stimex in Elmwood Park. And Stan would come up. Stan and Bobby would both come up to Doc Kwan's Oasis. That was the name of the bar. From time to time, and they too never forgot where they came from, and when they became great stars and that, they'd still pop in once in a while and mix with the people and the old cronies.
Is the people who own the bar, are they still around?
Well, Doc Kwan passed away a number of years ago, and his wife Nancy runs the bar now. But it's not the meeting place it used to be.
Were there other athletes that came too, Bears and so forth?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'd have the Bear rookies there every year when I was with the Bears. I'd bring them up when we had our mini camp for the rookies. We'd take them to the zoo. We'd have them at Kwan's for a cookout. And a bunch of them lived in Westchester, Glenn Hall and a couple others. So once in a while, yeah, with it, there were a lot of pro athletes that stopped in at Kwan's from time to time.
Now, when were you coaching with the Bears, Coach?
I started with the Bears when I retired from high school in 82. I went with the Bears from 82 to 93. Then I went to the Indianapolis Colts from 93 to 98. And then I went back with Coach Ditka at the Saints in 2001.
What did you coach at the Bears?
I didn't coach. I was a scout. I was a talent scout, and I enjoyed every minute of it, and a lot of guys don't get a break like that. Coach for 34 years and then have another 21-year career in the NFL.
How did you go from high school coach to talent scout in the NFL?
When I coached at Missouri, there was a young player there, Bill Tobin. He later became the pro personnel director for the Bears.
Oh, yeah. With
Jim Finks. And he saw in the paper where I had retired from high school, and I guess, they needed a scout. So he called and asked me if I'd be interested. And I said, well, I never scouted in the pros. And he said, well, you had 34 years of coaching experience. I said, well, I'll give it a try. If you like what I do and I like what I do, we've got a deal. And I was with him 13 years.
Last question, back to Stan. What will Chicago, what does his passing mean to Chicago?
The loss of a great athlete, the loss of a great humanitarian, the loss of a great guy, great person. He'll be remembered by many, not for only playing his entire career in Chicago, but for being the type man he was, a family man, a loving father, husband, friend, and just a regular guy. He'll be missed sorely, and he'll certainly be missed by all the old cronies at Kwan's who are still around.
The Hawks have the puck in their own zone. As Russell has it, passes up the middle of Stan Mikita. Mikita coming up to center ice. Mikita has two defensemen to try to beat. He beats one, he beats two. He scores!
The mighty Blackhawks. Take the attack, yeah, and we'll back you, Blackhawks. You're flying high now, so let's wrap it up. Let's go, you Hawks. Move out. Now all the Hawks. Here come the Hawks. Here comes the Hawks. Here comes the Hawks. Here comes the Hawks.
I hope you like this edition of the Chicago Way, and find us on iTunes and write us a kick-ass review. And if you hate me, don't write a bad review, just forget it, but I hope you do write a good review. This podcast is growing every day. I do two a week. with Jeff Carlin of WGN News. And I think I'm going to dip into these peaches. They're sweet. They're tasty. If you ever told me I'd drive 5 hours for peaches to Hardin, Illinois, on the banks of the Illinois River, and climb up a bluff, a limestone bluff, and pick peaches off a tree and eat the peaches, I'd say you're crazy. But I did, and I'd drive back for these Ringhausen peaches. Carrie Nahabedian from Brondeal, I brought her a box and some to Jeff Carlin, too. And Jeff seems to like them. I know Carrie does. And I love them just fine. Sitting out here in the tomato garden, trying to work up a column now. I've got to actually do my real job. For Jeff Carlin, WGN Radio. And for me, John Cass, nationally syndicated columnist, guy whose head is too big for his own shoulders, and should remember, always, the lessons of Stan Mikita and how a decent man treats everybody the same. Thanks for joining us. This has been the Chicago Way.